If you're hearing this, it means tickets are now on sale for our streaming Cybactacular.
That's what we're calling the streaming show of our Star Trek V review that we toured last year. We filmed our Hollywood show, and it's going to be streaming on Thursday, May 16th at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. And the stream will be available for a couple of weeks after that. If you can't watch right at the premiere time. A couple of pieces of information about this. If you support us at MaximumFun.org/join and your membership is current, check your email inbox because Maximum Fun will have emailed you a promo code to get $5 off your ticket. And also, we have some VIP packages available that include a meet and greet with me and Adam. Those are going fast, so jump on that if you want a meet and greet VIP package. Again, it's greatestgentour.com to get your tickets for the streaming Cybactacular.
Here's to the finest crew in Starfleet.
Engage.
Captain Jean-Luc Picard, the U.S.
Commander Benjamin Sisko, Federation Starbase, Deep Space Nine.
Welcome to The Greatest Generation, Deep Space Nine. It's a Star Trek podcast by two guys who are a little bit embarrassed to have a Star Trek podcast. I'm Adam Pranica.
I'm Ben Harrison.
Ben, we are in the... it's the next day. It's the day after the 4th of July. Occasionally we don't talk about the specific day we record things, but I feel like it's germane to what's going on with us today. We know what's on deck.
Yeah.
It's a Quarks Bar episode, but for many, it's maybe more of a drinking holiday this year than any other year. I was one of those people. Ben, did you celebrate in any particular way?
We have some friends who have an apartment that overlooks the lake near our house and has a fairly spectacular view, and they're faced in the right direction that you can see the Dodger Stadium fireworks over the hill.
Oh.
So we went over there for that. What I did not realize is that the neighborhood of Los Angeles that I live in is a real hotspot for fairly astonishing volumes of illegal fireworks. Like, I'm going to say from like about an hour before the sun went down to about 3 hours after the sun went down, there was just a sustained like Fallujah level of explosion noise going off all around us all the time.
Wow.
It was totally unbelievable. Like, we had, you know, a 180 degree view of a huge swath of East LA, and it was just fucking mayhem the entire time. Like, we saw somebody shoot a Roman candle into a palm tree that then caught on fire, and like the fire department had to come put out the tree.
Wow.
It was bonkers.
Is this something that you like and enjoy?
Well, I'm also a dog owner, and they really upset my pup. And
that is what I was getting at.
Yeah,
then.
It's hard for me to not be just thinking about his feelings all the time, especially given the fact that I tend to minimize the importance of my own feelings. So having somebody else to worry about is a really attractive situation for me.
This is my first 4th of July as the person for a dog.
Yeah.
And it was not pleasant.
No.
Not pleasant to see this special guy, this good, good boy, fall apart over the course of a day.
Yeah.
And he did not do great at all.
Yeah, man. My neighbors told me that they medicate one of their dogs on 4th of July because he has such a tough time with it.
We got some veterinary CBD from our local pet shop.
Uh-huh. I've seen this, and I thought about buying it, but then I was like, that is very expensive, and I don't really know if I even believe it or not.
Well, I think your dog will vary, and obviously this does not constitute veterinary medical advice.
Oh, no? You're not...
It did nothing for Sprocket. As directed, we gave him the prescribed dosage.
Yeah.
The day before, the morning of, and then the evening of July 4th, and I detected no change in his level of stress about fireworks.
I'm sorry to hear that, dude. That sucks.
It sucked for him. It also sucked for my wife, who went to work as normal this morning, as frequently happens on a midweek holiday. Mm-hmm. She was up early and back to work today, but she mentioned that she hardly slept at all because Sprocket was standing and panting and breathing next to her side of the bed basically all night.
Oh, buddy.
Which, I mean, she had no safe harbor in the bed because had she turned away from him, she would have been faced with my panting and breathing on my side of the bed.
Yeah,
so
that's no good. Nobody wants that, Adam.
Neither of us got much sleep, and I did consume a lot of beverages yesterday, so getting back up on the horse today for the July 5th episode.
We both forgot this was a drunk episode until, like, a few minutes before we had to record.
It is frequently something that you want to plan around.
Yeah.
I've come around to the idea. I have a 32-ounce bottle of a local beer that I've been wanting to drink for a while.
Oh, yeah?
That I think will make a great accompaniment for today's episode.
32 is an awful lot of ounces.
It is. It's from a local brewery called Urban Family. It's called Northwest Nectar. It's a tart saison with local nectarines, Ben.
Wow.
I thought a little bit of a sweet flavor would help the episode go down. What do you think?
Is the Pacific Northwest particularly known for its stone fruit?
Of course not. Not at all.
I mean,
but a friend of the podcast works there and hooked me up with a couple of bottles, so we'll see what happens.
All right.
What are you going to drink on the show?
I'm drinking a spiced rum out of St. Lucia.
Mm-hmm.
Called the Chairman's Reserve. It's kind of a basic spiced rum.
Basic bitch rum.
I think if you've had a Captain Morgan spiced rum, you probably can get a... You could probably imagine like that, but slightly less garbagey. It's basically how I would describe this. It's nice. It's an easy sipper. You know, I'm just having that with some ice. I feel like I have been doing beer on a lot of eps lately and finding myself insanely burpy. And I try to.
That is a thing.
I want to edit it out. I'm hoping it's not super evident to people. It's not ruining, because you don't want to hear that. But I feel like save ourselves some work in post-production. I think you're going to be editing this episode. So why not spare you all of my burps and drink something a little bit stiffer?
That is great. What a sweet, sweet gesture.
Mm-hmm.
From you to me.
It's the gift that keeps on giving, Adam.
This beer is says that it's tart on the label, and they're right about that. It's almost a Gose amount of tart.
Oh, like those Goses.
Delicious.
Mm-hmm. One thing I will say, Adam, is that if you get testy, I do have beer at the at the ready in case I need to unload some burps on you.
Let's hope you don't cross over to beers, Ben, on today's episode. It's season 2, episode 23 of Deep Space Nine. It's crossover.
Do you realize how incredible this is? No, of course you don't.
And I feel like the establishing interior shot here is split diopter, like right away.
Yeah. There's some pretty fancy camera work in this first scene.
Flashy, for sure.
We've got your boy, Dr. Bashir, and your girl, Major Kira.
He is not my boy, Ben. I renounce Dr. Bashir.
I mean, he has really swung wildly in this season, hasn't he? This is a bad ep for him. Like, he comes across as the old Bashir of season one.
If you don't like Bashir, you might like this episode for what happens to him. But unfortunately, what happens to him doesn't go far enough to feel any kind of catharsis.
I get the bends. Every Bashir ep we get, it's a different guy.
I mean, we tend to get a lot of road trip Bashir episodes. This time he's paired up with Kira, who is just like really having to marinate in his company in in kind of a terrible way. Like, she tells him he has a headache, which has got to be a thing he hears all the time. And all she wants is a little peace and quiet to meditate. And Bashir just can't shut his yapper.
I mean, I dig her discomfort here, but Kira, you're in a fucking Winnebago. Go to the back.
Yeah, go to the back room that we know is there with the giant conference table.
You're not in a bunk bed. Like, yeah. you got room to move around.
Yeah, she does not take this opportunity. Instead, she comes to the realization that Bashir has no sense of conversational space and is quite clearly the loud breather in yoga.
What are you doing?
He is just that guy. He just cannot turn it off.
In through the nose, out through the mouth, lion's breath. Ha!
He's really awful in this scene. And Kira, fairly patient.
He pushes her buttons, and I think he's kind of mindlessly pushing her buttons, but she does let it get to her when he, like, kind of slags off her favorite musician or whatever. Like, you
that's
know.
A good point, Ben. Like, you mentioned that he might not be able to help it. Does that make it any better?
I don't know.
It's not like Bashir is trying to annoy her, but he should know better.
My dad used to do that bellows breath thing, by the way.
Oh, that's a real thing?
On, like, long car rides, if he was, like, feeling sleepy behind the wheel, would do that. So I was a little, like, transported back to dorky dad vibes in this scene.
God, he is a dorky dad, isn't he? He's a dorky dad without the kid.
Yeah, he's got like when he's out of his Starfleet uniform, he's just got like a pair of Skechers and like a apron for grilling that has like some dorky slogan on it. And he wears a ball cap that he got for free at an event at an Orchard Supply and Hardware.
He is flipping those burgers a lot, like an unnecessary amount of flipping of that meat.
Well, he read that J. Kenji Lopez article about how maybe flipping a burger a lot is a good thing.
I don't prescribe to that at all.
Yeah, you think you're smarter than J. Kenji Lopez Alt? I don't believe that, Adam.
In this particular area, I am. You know, leave that meat alone.
That guy's a scientist. He knows what he's doing.
Grilling is supposed to be fun. I don't want your science introduced to my cooking. It's sort of why I stopped using the immersion circulator as much as I used to.
You're not sous-viding that much?
Like any piece of gadgetry I am enamored with early on, I used it once or twice a week when I first got it. Now I'm just using it to make eggs.
It does make a nice egg, that sous-vide technology. At the 4th of July thing I went to last night, my friend handed me the tongs when I walked over to take a look at his grill.
And so, you must have been great friends.
You keep an eye on this, buddy. I'll be right back. I swear I'm not leaving you with this. And then I had to like finish 100% of the grilling.
Whoa.
Yeah.
I thought this was going to be like a demonstration of like culinary intimacy, but this was a dereliction of food duty.
I think it was like 50% dereliction of food duty and 50%. You know that's just going to get done right if you leave it in Ben's hands.
Fuck off. Is that the reputation you have?
Yeah.
That's you?
He's like, this guy's read a J. Kenji Lopez Alt article or two.
What the fuck? I don't even know who that is that you're referring to. Is this the Neil deGrasse Tyson of food that you're talking about?
He doesn't do the thing where he's an asshole to somebody because they were wrong about something.
Oh, that's just a thing you do?
Yeah. I mean, I think that
Oh, this beer's making me mean, Ben. Mean beer.
That's a great endorsement for a beer that somebody gave you for free, presumably for some promotional reason. The article that I referred to by J. Kenji Lopez Alt is on SeriousEats.com. That's his food website. And he's even recommended lots and lots of flipping for steaks. He's gone on to steaks and recommended that.
Keep your mouth off my steak, J. Kenji Lopez Alt.
Did you go to MIT, Adam? I'm just, I forget. Where did you go to school?
Went to Kitchen Stadium University, home of the spatulas.
Mm.
Anyway, Kira and Bashir head into the wormhole on their way back to DS9, and wouldn't you know it, I think like most recreational vehicles, tire pressure is crucial.
Oh, yeah.
And I think they have a little bit of a blowout here.
What's wrong?
The wall feels not fully collapsed.
If your tires are not properly inflated, it can lead to pretty unfortunate things like slipping into the mirror universe.
Which they do, which is shown visually in a couple of interesting ways. There's the accompanying flash of interdimensional travel. I feel like that's a thing.
It's less concept-y than the time travel sequence in Star Trek IV, The Voyage Home.
Sure.
But it is noticeable.
The one thing you're going to want to do is break that center line on the camera. And they, upon the bright flash that accompanies interdimensionality, they move the camera across the center line.
Yeah.
So now we're shooting from behind.
And they also go to wide-ass lenses. A lot of the rest of this sequence is shot on some real fucking wide lenses. And they come out of the wormhole. They're like, boy, that was a bumpy ride. We're going to really have to chew the chief out when we get back to the station.
What happened to the station?
And they look out the window. No station.
Yeah, it wasn't where they left it. And that's a problem. And another problem is the Klingon battleship that rolls up on them pretty fast.
Pretty fast. And these dudes beam aboard like guns drawn, like pistols out.
You can tell this is a cramped area because when there's four people in the front section of a runabout, the only place you can stick a camera is on the floor shooting up.
Yeah, it's all shot from a hi-hat. Like a hi-hat is basically just the top of a tripod, like screwed onto a piece of plywood.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got the camera shooting basically waist up on everybody and up everybody's nose. It is one of the weirdest choices I've ever seen camera work wise in Star Trek. And they shoot the whole scene this way. There's multiple camera positions, multiple angles. They cut around.
You need a certain face for this not to be a horror show of a composition, because this is about the most unflattering angle you could shoot any on-camera person with. Like, it's bad. It's bad in most cases, and yet no one looks ugly in this scene.
You've got our two lead actors in the scene are probably, like, I think they're both extraordinarily good-looking.
Yeah, and not just Star Trek good looking, but just generally good
looking. And then the Klingons like look more Klingon-y. I mean,
right.
It's interesting that this angle does a lot to de-emphasize the things about Klingons that we associate with Klingonness, namely headloaf.
Yep.
But still, they really read as imposing and threatening. Like, I mean, I think that obviously, the camera angle is giving them a lot of help in the imposingness department, but they're very Klingon-y, despite the camera angle.
Good day not to wear the utility kilt by these two guys. They beam on board, and upon seeing Kira, like, recoil in something adjacent to fear, I would say. Like, they are not feeling Kira's presence here.
Yeah. It's not quite fear, but it has the same real estate values as fear. It's not in the same school district as fear, but a lot of the same services are available. And the Academy Award for Dumbest Analogy goes to...
Often the fear neighborhood is the first to gentrify.
Right.
You start seeing Trader Joe's pop up where you didn't think one would.
Where once there was a funky coffee shop, now it's a really hoity-toity coffee shop that's doing pour-overs and, you know, playing vinyl records and, you know, all of the fancy stuff is in town now.
You know, bus service has really improved in fear.
I noticed that... alternate side parking rules are now being kind of enforced in fear because they're really trying to keep those streets sweeped.
Ben, something happens here before we go to break that I think foreshadows the way that the story will be told going forward, which is the Klingons beam off. Kira and Bashir look at each other and do nothing more than shrug their shoulders before going to DS9. I think what
which
this
is an
is
orbit
doing,
of Bajor.
Yeah, and I think what this is indicating is a speed to the story efficiency that is too fast. It's much, much too fast for what they're trying to do here, because
it kind of feels like a feature film level of story, like number of story beats, but in a 45-minute episode.
I think we'll get to this when we talk about whether or not we like the episode, but this 10 pounds of episode in a 2-pound bag. And they cannot talk about what just happened because they're on a timeline. They need to hit DS9 mm-hmm. before the break.
They got to meet the intendant, and they do. They like walk onto the station. They meet Gull Garrick.
My name is Garrick.
Which really just doesn't sound right, does it?
It's a little too alliterative.
Yeah.
But he looks great. He is an actor of the quality that can flip that switch. Like, he carries himself like a gull, and he is a believable gull.
Yeah.
I think.
He walks like a gull. He talks like a gull.
The other person we meet is Catsuit Kira, Ben. And good Lord, I have often admitted to being at least Kira curious. Ben, if I were to like choose a Star Trek sexuality,
A trexuality, if you will.
This episode confirms my suspicions. My type is Kira.
She like shops at the same store as Darth Vader, but in the sexy section.
She is resplendent in her leather catsuit, and a lot like Garrick, it is not just a costume change for her. Her physicality is different.
Yeah.
And so is Garrick's. Mm-hmm. Like, this is not just superficial mirror universe shit happening with a change in facial hair. This is a lot more than that, and it really works.
Yeah. She has, like, so much swagger because she's the apex predator. Like, nobody can get her.
That word, I think, is so apt because she's panther-like in this black catsuit.
Goldacott. 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 So,
for all that's made about the alliance between the Klingons and Cardassians, and then later on the Bajorans, yeah, of which she is one, like, there clearly is a hierarchy to this alliance, and Bajorans is the bottom. And she wields a ton of power on this station. Like, it is not, it's not the power of someone who is third on the podium in this alliance. Like, she right. kicks a lot of ass there.
She wields a lot of power. I mean, like, I think it's kind of the locality of the station, you know? Like, it's revealed later on that Garrick has been gunning for that job, you know, like, wanting to make an attempt on her life in an elevator the entire time. And can't do it. Like, she's better than everybody.
So let's run down our Mirror Universe characters that we get to know in this episode. We've got Intendant Kira, the Ben Sisko of the station right now. Her exo is Garrick.
Mm-hmm.
We've got Mine Supervisor Odo. And this is important because as soon as Kira and Bashir arrive on the station, Bashir is thrown in with the rest of the Terrans to work mine duty.
It's kind of like Terok Nor is kind of operating the way Occupation Terok Nor did, where
right.
there are some sort of like semi-enslaved people working on mining and everybody else treats it like a casino. But the enslaved people in this case are Terrans. So in the post-TOS mirror universe, it seems that Terrans are really, really got the shit end of the stick.
I think if you're a Terran working the mine supply chain, the station's probably the better place to be than in the mine itself, right? Like, the processing station is what Terok Nor is. The right. mine is down on the surface.
Yeah. They imply that there's some like different castes among the Terrans. Mm-hmm. Like, there's Thetas and lambdas and stuff.
Sigmanu is not going to want to hang out with us if we fucking suck.
Like, we don't get much about that, but it seems like they're sort of being divided and conquered in an interesting way.
No, there's not enough time for that, Ben. We got to move forward. We got to meet not your friend O'Brien.
I am Chief Miles Edward O'Brien. This is fucking spectacular.
Who's kind of like the station's janitor.
Mm-hmm.
And his status is such that like he's given additional freedoms because he's a handyman.
He's kind of the low-class version of what he is in Prime Universe.
And for that reason, Mine Supervisor Odo is a little less harsh on him. But one person who he is especially harsh with right from jump is Bashir.
Yeah.
Because Odo and Bashir do not get along in any universe. And in putting Bashir to work, sure seems like Bashir is a lost person in a place where he doesn't belong, and Odo does not give a shit.
Yeah, Bashir doesn't know any of the rules of this game yet.
We'll see to it that he learns them.
To Odo, Bashir reads as a wise-ass piece of shit who, like, claims to be a doctor, claims to be a fancy lad, and he keeps, like, slapping him and asking for his designation.
Yeah, that doesn't work.
Yeah. What's your designation, Adam?
Sorry?
You don't have one?
No, like, that's my designation.
Oh, you're designated Canadian.
Ben, it seems like baths are really a Mirror Universe thing. Because in one of the next scenes, Mirror Universe Kira is in one, and through a nifty bit of composition and camera work, rises up out of her bath. Into a towel and then into a robe.
She's really taking the Coming to America style bath where she's got like some people that are there to bathe her.
Yeah. Is John Roderick from the Mirror Universe, given that he is a noted bath enthusiast?
I don't know. Intendant Kira has taken a great deal of interest in Major Kira. You know, she doesn't have a lot of people in her life that she can trust. She loves that this is another one of her. She is aware of the Prime Universe. Like, she's educated about this issue in a way that, like, Gul Garrick is not.
Ben, I feel like her interest skews into seduction in a weird way. Did you get that vibe?
And what's going on here seems pretty pervy, doesn't it?
I think that may be that our judgment as heterosexual men is a little clouded by how ridiculously good looking she is, because she is for sure like slinking around and like striking a bunch of poses that I find very erotic.
There's no such thing as a non-romantic grab of someone else's chin as you're talking to them. There's no plutonic way to do that.
I guess not. I mean, I certainly would not do that to anyone but my wife, and maybe not even my wife.
You certainly wouldn't do that to a version of yourself, Ben. You don't even like to jack it.
You mean like in the mirror?
Yeah.
Hey, good looking. All right. Getting a little tumescent there, I see. Well, be ashamed to put that to waste.
Only you would seduce yourself with tumescence.
Man, if I could muster that much compassion for myself, I would be a much healthier person, I think.
Benjamin R. Harrison, compassionate masturbator is the goal, really.
Yeah.
Is that what you tell your therapist? I want to eventually turn the corner into literally loving myself.
Yeah. Like, mirror on the ceiling, looking up at it during.
Another person we get to meet here is Ben Sisko.
Yeah.
Who low-key operates a slave ship operation.
Is that what it is?
That's what I got the feeling of.
I honor her by collecting duties. Of a sort from vessels that pass in this direction.
The case that he makes is like he does runs for Kira, and those runs often include supplying her with things and people. And the headcanon that I put in there was that the people end up working in the mine. He scoops up Terrans when he can.
Wow.
And the reason that he's not in the mine himself as a Terran or the rest of his crew is that he's kicking back, right?
Yeah, he's fun for her.
Yeah.
They have a kind of a fuck buddy relationship that I guess means she affords him quite a bit more autonomy than your average Terran gets. But it you know, he's kind of a Han Solo-y kind of guy. Like you get the feeling that he's a criminal element that the state has a good relationship with.
Yeah, that Han Solo comparison I think is very apt. He's a real jump over the bar and pour yourself a drink kind of guy. He's a real jump into the tub because it's clearly a two-person tub sort of person.
Yeah, and he does jump over the bar because Quark, who is a much less flashily dressed version of himself in this universe, gets arrested for being the guy that is secretly on the down low trying to help Terrans smuggle themselves off the station.
There's something about how Quark looks that is also different in the Mirror Universe. And Prime Universe Quark is loaded up with a bunch of thick curtains as a costume. When you disrobe him and just stick him in like the onesie that he's wearing,
yeah,
he looks diminished like in that way too.
Yeah.
Like, he's not a successful bar owner here, but to see his giant head on top of a smaller body, it makes him look unhealthy and desperate.
He looks frail, yeah.
Yeah, that's what his vibe is.
It really makes me appreciate the work that the costume department does on proportionality on this show.
Yeah.
Like, I think that low-key, it's super good for all the characters. Like, we talked about, like, Cal Hudson wearing his comm badge low on his chest in an earlier episode. Like, the way they use the size of elements of costumes to make people look better in this show is like super on point.
Yeah.
And that's even true in like one-off costumes. Like I think this Quark costume is like very intentionally there to make him look the frailest and most diminished version of himself.
I think Armin Shimerman does great here by not cartooning it up either with his attitude. I think makeup-wise, he looks tired, like more tired than maybe he's ever been. But he's not acting drunk to act drunk. It's subtle.
Do you think anybody believes that we're not really getting drunk in this episode?
Well, I would invite them to fuck off if that's what they think. I'm drinking this beer as fast as I can.
Where are you at, W/R/T 32 ounces?
I've been pouring into a pint glass.
An imperial pint or an American pint?
Oh, this is the drunk Shimoda glass.
American
and
pint.
I've got a third of that left, and I want to say I might be able to just finish the bottle right now. And I've filled the glass with the leavings of the bottle. The bottle is now empty. The glass is now three quarters of the way full.
Leavings of the bottle? Is the bottle taking dumps?
It's the remains of the bottle, Ben.
I love that movie in the 90s.
Yeah.
I'm in the middle of my I'm going to say third rum.
The thing that I will tell you is that the tartness of this, it's having an effect on my elocution.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
I've got tart mouth.
Alamarain, come to fore. Alamarain, come to fore.
What are you doing? Alamarain,
come to fore.
What are you doing? Alamarain,
come to
fore. What are you doing now?
Exactly.
Yeah, Chief O'Brien, not Chief O'Brien, but Smiley O'Brien, he gets no respect. He gets no respect from Odo. He gets no respect from Sisko. He's a guy that has a lot of skills and undeniable talent to contribute, but nobody really cares about him. It's a lot more like the way O'Brien was on the Enterprise than he is on Deep Space Nine.
You know what? That's interesting. And if Mirror Universe O'Brien is seen as a tragic figure, then I think you must consider TNG era O'Brien to be the same, right?
Right.
Yeah, because I guess he's the only person that can shoot a thing into a backlit wall panel. Like, that's... That is all he does throughout the episode.
Yeah, he's always got a panel open and he's fidgeting with whatever's inside it. You know, he's curious about his parallel universe counterpart, and Bashir is uniquely qualified to relate what that guy is like, you know, like telling him about the friendship they have and the, you know, the wife and daughter that Chief O'Brien has and the position he has in the hierarchy on the station.
And just like Quark and many of the other characters, O'Brien doesn't like fall to pieces at this news.
Sounds like he got the lucky draw between me and him.
This doesn't affect him in a strong way, but it does make him think.
Yeah.
And that'll that thinking will come in handy later. Concurrently, Garak is in Kira Prime's room, and he's there to warn her about something.
She'll never let you leave, you know. Can't you tell?
There's this infatuation that is undeniable, and whatever mirror universe Kira has told Prime Kira about helping her escape back to her universe is a lie. But Prime Universe Kira can assist Garak by helping to take her place, because Garak's got a plan, and the plan is to kill Mirror Universe Kira, replace her with Prime Universe Kira, and then have Prime Universe Kira resign and then go off with Bashir a little later off to wherever.
Yeah, and the insurance policy is going to be Bashir. He's going to like keep Bashir under Cardassian control so that Kira agrees to the second phase of the plan wherein she resigns, because, you know, your mirror universe person is not to be trusted with being suddenly raised to power. And I'm sure that you don't trust anybody else with that either.
It's a ton of leverage.
Yeah. So this is a big evil plot. And I think Garak is aware that he is taking a big risk bringing her into it.
True career advancement requires risk.
I mean, what we know about the mirror universe is you can become captain of something just by killing the captain, right?
Mm-hmm.
But he's sneakier, and he sees the arrival of Prime Universe Kira as kind of a cool advantage that he can potentially play.
It's tremendous leverage, because poor Bashir is down there slaving away in the mines. From time to time, Prime Kira can sneak down there and like have some sotto voce conversations with him. I don't know why they let her do that. Like, Odo is framed in the background, like mean mugging them both whenever this happens.
Yeah, and that Klingon lady with the nipples on her uniform that keeps following Kira around.
She's got a cartoon drill bra going.
What's that vehicle that they drive around in Ninja Turtles? That like
that's exactly the one that comes to mind, right?
Drills around underground.
Yeah.
It's the Evil Foot Clan's mutant module.
Turns out Mirror Universe Sisko has the same appetites as Prime Universe Sisko, because Kira goes to find him hanging out like at a personal buffet, like napkin tucked into uniform. Prime Universe Kira knows she's going to need some help if she's going to get out of this situation. And so she asks Mirror Universe Sisko for this help.
Right. And she's kind of thinking that this is going to be Sisko cut from the same cloth as the Sisko she works with. And she's more right than I think he knows in this scene. Like, he kind of throws it back in her face. And he's like, I take care of me and mine, and I'm not out here to like start a political revolution or anything.
Like, what helps the viewer not get super frustrated with Kira here, I think, is that Bashir and Mirror Universe Kira are the only ones who really know how the Mirror Universe works. Like, early on, Mirror Universe Kira talks about Kirk's trip back to the Mirror Universe and how it destabilized the Terran Empire and led to their fall in the face of the alliance of the Klingons, Cardassians, and Bajorans. But Kira didn't know that.
Perhaps you'd recognize the name Kirk. No, I'm sorry, I don't.
And so she isn't super clear, I think, on how strong the mirror works against the people that she knows.
Right.
Which is why I wasn't upset when she goes up to Sisko, you know, thinking that there's goodness in him, because she has no way of believing how much of that may be contained in him or not.
Right. It also makes me wonder how much evil is potentially in Prime Sisko, because
right,
he does kind of wind up on her side of the situation, right?
Which could only mean the presence of that evil, right?
Yeah. So like Prime Kira gets put in a ball gown. She has to show up to this party. Garrick is very creepy and leering on her.
I do hope you'll save a dance for me.
I think a lot is going to be made about this gown and the cat suit and all of this stuff. But I just want to say again, the seduction has to do with her attitude.
Right, because Prime Kira is in the same gown as Mirror Kira, and it means two totally different things. She feels like exposed and vulnerable as Prime Kira, but as Mirror Kira, it's like she is rocking it in a very sexually provocative way.
I think you're lucky to have Nana Visitor play this part for that reason.
Yeah.
Because you've got to be able to do that in the same outfit.
Yeah.
It's a degree of difficulty thing.
You know, this is a party, but we also know that this is when Garrick is planning on doing his dirt. And so the stakes is high. And we catch up with Bashir in the down in the work section, and he's just totally wiped out. I think he's made a couple of bad choices here. There's a scene earlier where he's eating his slop and decides that it does not comport with the highest ideals of food, so he just gives it to somebody else.
Yeah, he's going to need his strength. Come on, man.
Yeah, you don't give your food away in a situation like that, man.
You give your food away in prison one time, and you're going to be giving it away the entire time. Yeah. That's no good.
If you get locked up, you beat the shit out of the first shapeshifter you run into and, establish some dominance. Demonstrate to the other prisoners that you are not to be fucked with.
If we didn't have Bashir, I think we'd have a pretty loose grasp on the passage of time, because the passage of time is red on his uniform and his hair.
His uniform is fucked up.
I think we could call it totally bedraggled at this point. scorch marks, and he's just sort of sopping wet.
Yeah, mud all down his shit.
Scrambled eggs all over his face.
But there's a thorium leak or something, right?
Yeah, you can't leak that thorium.
Yeah, Bashir kind of exploits this moment of chaos to beat up a guard and take his sidearm. And as he and the other Terrans are running out the door, he sees Odo spot him and go to draw his weapon, and he wastes Odo on the gore setting.
Odo goes up in a Ghostbusters 2 level ectoplasm explosion.
This is maybe my favorite special effect that Star Trek has ever done. This is so upsetting.
It's the best Odo effect we've gotten on the show, for sure.
Because they definitely blow up some real glop, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And the cut is perfect.
It's so good.
I know that this is never going to happen, but the HD transfer of Deep Space Nine would be worth it for this effect. Just to see more resolution on this. It's so cool.
Ben, I want to do a little punch-up on this scene, if I can.
Okay.
How much more rugged would it have been if Bashir had to shoot O'Brien in order to escape the mine? Because as it is, the relationship between Odo and Bashir is, it's there, but it's so much less grounded than the one between O'Brien and Bashir that for as terrifying as the Mirror Universe is, and for as tired and bedraggled as Bashir becomes by the midpoint in this episode, I wanted him to come to a moment where he was truly put to the test about what he was in the Prime Universe and what he has to become to survive the Mirror Universe. He's right. Never tested in that way. And I think this would have been a good moment to do that, especially because the utility of O'Brien isn't super necessary. O'Brien knows his way through the Jeffries tubes and through a couple of corridors.
Yeah.
But I think you could have...
Bashir, you could just have Bashir know how to do that.
Yeah, I think the rewrite could mean that he just finds his way through those areas without the need for an escort. especially because they get captured by the Klingons in a moment.
Right. Like it's not actually moving the story forward that he needs O'Brien's help. It's just it's just putting O'Brien in front of Sisko at the end.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which like we could have gotten to a million other ways.
I think this is what Star Trek Discovery did especially well in things concerning the Mirror Universe, is it made its characters like
have
reach
real
that
feelings
moment.
About that. About meeting their counterparts and stuff.
And about having to make awful decisions. You know, like you're trading your soul for survival in a place that's terrifying.
Yeah, Bashir is just a POW.
And even Kira isn't necessarily put to that kind of test. Like, she never has to choose someone to die.
I mean, I will say that, like, the fact that O'Brien gets fucked by Bashir's escape does have some weight to it. Like, you really do feel bad for this guy at that point. Like, Bashir could have made it read as he had taken O'Brien hostage when they got grabbed
right.
by the Klingons, but
right.
you know, like that, I mean, I don't know if that's bad writing or good writing given like where we're at on Bashir, but it's interesting, you know. It definitely was interesting to see.
We don't know if it's bad or good, but like it so easily could have been either with the addition of a choice.
Yeah.
A choice that he's never given. O'Brien gets a great monologue here when he's being sentenced to death to give his true feelings to Mirror Universe Kira.
What were you thinking?
This is also Colm Meaney, like, low-key showing his own chaps off. I mean,
yeah.
like, unmistakably O'Brien, but also, like, such a radically different O'Brien.
Yeah, it's not the desperate fuck you that a character gives when they know they're about to meet certain death. It's like a real introspective monologue about how things might have been different for him and like how Bashir told him about a version of himself that had hope and a reason for living that, yeah. that sounded so much better than the life that he has now.
If I can change, and you can change, everybody can change!
I loved that, like, ECU on his face as he's going through that too, like,
yeah,
like the camera like pushes in and pushes in and pushes in until he's like filling the frame.
Their sentence is slow death in the promenade. Bashir next to O'Brien.
Rough stuff. And we cut to that scene where they kill Bashir and O'Brien, and that's the end of the episode. Why don't we do that joke more often?
Yeah, the cut to theme. That's a great one.
I think the problem is that, like, TNG cut to theme, that's like it really hits.
Yeah.
But the cut to theme on Deep Space Nine doesn't hit that hard.
Maybe whenever we make that reference, we cut to the TNG theme.
Morn.
Dear sweet.
Morn.
You near, buddy?
Morn.
Hammer time.
Ben Solo barges in, guns a-blazing with his crew.
Yeah, Ben Solo shoots first. You better believe it, baby.
Sure does.
This scene looks like it is the kiss of death, and then it turns out that Ben Solo had like gotten all of his crazy scarred up Terrans in on a plan to kind of like take the station hostage, release these mm-hmm. Prime Universe dorks, and start the Terran revolution or whatever.
Have you lost your mind?
Boy, Ben, I'm kind of feeling a Che style t-shirt with Ben Sisko's face in the middle. What do you think about that?
I love arguing with assholes on the internet, Adam.
I have only one idea, and it's not even a good one.
It does not sell particularly well.
Sure doesn't.
You know, it does sell well. Our buddy Felipe Sobiero's, I'm sure I'm mispronouncing his name, but his Three Worf Morn t-shirt.
He designed something great that we couldn't sell ourselves, and so he is, and I hope he reaps the rewards, because that is a great design.
Hell yeah.
That thing happened, Ben, where we said something and then it was made. Pretty awesome how that works.
Yeah. Fun stuff.
So Mirror Universe Sisko and Mirror Universe O'Brien and Bashir and Kira run toward the platform where the runabout is. And there is maybe 10 seconds for Mirror Universe O'Brien to be convinced not to go with them and instead stay, even though we've seen how Mirror Universe Cisco treats Mirror Universe O'Brien, which is to say, not great, the way a bully treats someone who's being bullied.
Yeah, he's like, I'm going to stick with these guys. They make me feel terrible. They call me Smiley in a way that I find incredibly insulting.
I'm sure they have a locker to stick me in on that ship.
They replicated a locker specially for me.
This is another moment where, like, a little more time, I think, is necessary. But as it is, Prime Universe Bashir and Kira hop back on their runabout and impulse their way in an emergency fashion away from the station.
That shot of the runabout leaving the station is like one of the awesomest model effects, by the way.
It's great.
Also, like, seeing the Klingon cruiser out the window, like, taking shots at them.
Yeah.
Super awesome.
The incuriosity of that first scene when they arrive and Mirror Universe Kira asks how they got there and they drop the wormhole line but then cover it up.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this is where that's returned, because what secures their escape is that the Mirror Universe is not aware of the wormhole that is in their backyard.
Right. I wondered why the Klingon cruiser, like, that is taking pot shots at them wouldn't register what that is.
I thought for sure that cruiser would follow them through the wormhole.
Yeah. They should have, and then the station should have blown it up, right? Wouldn't that have been, like, the right exciting conclusion to the two-part episode arc that we should have had here?
Ben, the button on the episode is like, Prime Universe Cisco is an ops, like, complaining about their inability to find, like, wreckage from the runabout. When the runabout comes to the wormhole, they FaceTime them, and it's like Kira in a dress and Bashir looking like he's been in a fire. How dare they slide whistle the ending of this?
I know.
Where have you been?
Through the looking glass, Commander. It's good to be back.
I was like, no! Did you like this episode, Ben?
I did. What I like about it is that it feels very self-contained. It's a real big-time adventure that doesn't necessarily need to change anything for our characters going forward, which is a kind of Star Trek episode I like. You know, I like the ones that are boring and don't, you know, the stakes aren't that high at all. But I also like ones like this where it's like a crazy adventure that you throw a couple of characters into a crazy situation, see what happens. And the stakes get raised over and over again in this episode. And I have no idea, but I almost picture the writers and, like, the special effects people talking, like, I have a great idea for killing Odo. But obviously we can't kill Odo. But how could we get to killing Odo in a story? And the writer's going, like, well, there was that Mirror Universe episode in TOS. Like, let's do something with that. And Odo's, like, a bad guy, and we hate him, and we get to see him blow up. And writing a story around getting to that moment is super fun and good. I also like that they kind of leave it open to come back to. I think there are obvious problems with, you know, cramming as much story into this episode as they did. But the story that they crammed, I had a lot of fun watching. How about you, Adam?
I love the headcanon of an effects artist going, yeah, you know, like, I grabbed a Home Depot bucket and I just, like, threw in some plaster and some other shit. And, like, I really think this would be good if we ever had to explode Odo.
Yeah.
Can we, like, make an episode around this?
Isn't that, like, kind of what you picture, though? Like, that effect is so, like, show-stoppingly great.
Yeah.
It is. I mean, like, you think back to Conspiracy and the
it's a conspiracy level effect, isn't it?
But it's so much better. It's like it's Conspiracy plus 10 years, you know? It's like we blew up Remick, sure, and then we had a weird puppet creature come out of his his gory corpse, I think we can do a lot better.
You're never going to be able to right that wrong, man. Just let it go. You're just grinding metal. Ease down. Ben, this episode infuriates me.
Oh,
it infuriates
Adam.
Me because of its potential. Like, I loved so much about this, but it tasked me over and over again. Like, scenes would just fly by. We're just sprinting through this episode. And the end, the indignity of this ending, we're told a quarter of the way through this episode that, like, Kirk's Mirror Universe episode had these ramifications. Massive ones. The fall of the Terran Empire. The rise of this new alliance. The change of transporter technology forever. Like, all this stuff. And yet, we aren't even given the goddamn common courtesy of, like, a mission debrief scene with Bashir.
A mission reach around.
And Kira, like, talking it over. Give me a fucking break. Where have you been? We've been through the looking glass. Fuck you. That is a fuck you of an end to this episode.
Shit, dog. You really gotta calm yourself down, buddy.
Here's the thing, like, the episodes that I dislike, like, I can totally accept a, you know, not a great episode, just two people going to a conference. There are low-stakes Deep Space Nine episodes that I like. This is a high-stakes Deep Space Nine episode, and I just cannot brook the stakes having no consequence at the end of it. Like, this is treated like a bottle episode. And it just cannot end this way.
I mean, I think that they leave a lot of pieces in place for it not to be a bottle episode in a way that feels like it isn't going to end this way.
You and I both know we watch the next episode after we watch this one.
Yeah.
And nothing happens. You know what happens every episode, Ben, as we check the priority one messages. You want to see what we got?
We do that every episode.
Priority one message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
Need a supplemental income.
Supplemental income?
Supplemental.
Supplemental.
Yeah, it's extra.
By the interest alone, could be enough to buy this ship.
Ben, our first priority one message is of a personal nature. It is from Joel, Allison, Aaron, Mom, Dad, Josh, Terry, Hilton, Justin, and Laura. It is for Matt Nectarline. The message goes like this. It was the best of times. It was the worst of times. Message, Spock. None that I'm conscious of, except, of course, happy birthday. Surely, the best of times. Happy 30th birthday to the best brother, husband, son, and friend there is from Ben, Adam, Kevin Uxbridge, and all of us. We hope you have the best birthday of all birthdays everywhere.
Happy birthday, Matt. I've been told that you love the Star Trek film, Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan.
Matt is a dude. It may surprise you to know that I do not observe birthdays, as I am a timeless entity. I'm like the person that celebrates Christmas as a cultural holiday and not a religious one.
And frankly, I don't have a lot of respect for Khan as a man. He claims a great intelligence, and yet when all of life was wiped out on his planet, he did not make a small section of Malibu beachfront property for himself.
I am unlike you in most ways, Khan. I am a good marksman, and I do hit the target. When I was given the opportunity to abandon the death of my wife, Roshan, I did not abandon by virtue of one hooshnack.
I abandoned the shit out of her.
Do we have another message, Ben? Speaking of abandoning things, can you aban a priority one message?
Sadly, Adam, we do not have another message, but I will say this. You can get a message by going to MaximumFun.org/Jumbotron and ordering a personal message for $100 or a commercial message for $200. Get your message in front of tens of thousands of awesome listeners. And, you know, that's pretty great. But also,
It helps promote the production of this program. Anyways, I am done with all of the rum.
But do you have a question for me, Ben? Just ask the question.
Hey, Adam.
What's that, Ben?
Did you find yourself a drunk Shimoda?
Incredible.
Drunk Shimoda!
As the full weight of Ben's rum rains upon him, so too has the 32 ounces of microbrew consumed in alacrity. Ben, my drunk Shimoda is a visual Shimoda.
Oh, shit, dog.
At about what I wrote down was the 27-minute mark. This is the scene where Prime Kira.
I'm just gonna give you like a quick. I'm gonna break in with a quick Shimoda preview, which is that I have also written down something at the 27-minute mark.
Oh shit! So this is the scene with Prime Kira and Mirror Universe Kira, and they're face to face. They're doing that Thomas Riker, Will Riker thing.
Yes.
Except the eye line is perfect. It's much, much better this time. Here's the thing. When you are shooting mirror shit with two of the same actor.
Yeah.
And one of the ways that you sell that is by one side touching the other. And the only way to do that, the only way is by sticking an arm in, like faking the angle that it's coming in from the opposite end.
Yeah.
It's hard to describe, but if you're watching at the 27 minute, you'll know what I mean. It's like Picard playing the flute, right? Mm-hmm. Those are someone else's hands.
Yeah.
This is a stranger's hand coming in and touching Kira's chin for this scene. My Shimoda is that arm and hand.
We're a double Shimoda this episode, Adam.
We both picked the third hand. That's so great.
Here's my headcanon.
Yeah.
They were like, who's done some like good hand performance around Hollywood lately? And they watched the episode of Seinfeld where they had like man hands for one of the women that Jerry is dating.
This is a believable hand to me, though. Is it to you?
It doesn't read as Nana Visitor's hand at all to me. It is a totally...
Oh.
The weight and scale of the hand is totally different.
Like, you're going to tell me about Nana Visitor's hand weight?
I think she has a very delicate and elegant hand, and this is not that hand.
All right, I'm scrubbing to the 27 minute. I got to see this. Oh, shit. Yeah, that is a...
It's a beefier hand than the Nana Visitor is rocking.
It is semi-beefy. But, God, there's so much going on in this scene because, yeah, that is another hand.
I would say that, like
it's the Phantom.
We've talked a lot about, like, the subtle shit that Nana Visitor does as an actor. Like, acting is such a weird job because... Some of it is portraying emotions, and some of it is just like remembering like what hand you were holding a cup of wine, a glass of wine in, you know, like, and like, you know, moving it around the scene and you know, there's like that precision shit of just remembering like how your body was angled and setting something down when you say
it's,
the line.
It's technical acting.
Right. She's fucking incredible at the technical side too, because there are two or three long takes where she is acting against herself in this episode, where her eyeline is perfect, her timing is perfect, her fucking emotional truth is perfect. Like, she's fucking amazing.
She's the best.
Like,
it's unbelievable. And she gets so many chances. I'm not talking about her specifically, but an actor gets so many chances to blow it in this episode specifically, and she doesn't ever.
She never gives up a point. She's the fucking unscorable goalie. Like,
she's great.
She's fucking great.
Another thing they do in this scene is they light both of the Kiras differently, and I know why they do that. Like, they're making Mirror Universe dark and Prime Universe light.
Yeah.
But there is a logic to this that doesn't hold. Like, it's an impossible lighting situation.
Right.
But it does look dramatic. So that's why they did it that way.
It looks dramatic, but it also doesn't break the illusion. Like,
right.
Which is hard mode for lighting.
Yeah.
You can light something in a way that is dramatic and arch, or you can light something in a way that is believable to do both at the same time.
Hey, Ben, have you ever been to the St. Louis Arch?
Fuck you. Gotta get that gold press light. Get that gold press light.
Am I right? When I was growing up, I didn't have anyone to tell me about personal grooming. I had to learn these things on my own. So I'm here to save you some embarrassment and recommend the grooming tools that I use, the products from Manscaped. Now, this is a company that constantly has its mind on your bush. Imagine the meetings they have. Imagine the pictures they have in their PowerPoint presentations. Now imagine your junk looking its best thanks to the Lawnmower 5.0. This thing is the latest Bonch trimming technology. With two interchangeable heads, a standard one for taking just a little off the top, and a new foil blade to go smooth wherever your heart desires. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVES at manscaped.com. That's 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVES at manscaped.com. Nothing like a little spring cleaning in your pants.
Are you looking for the perfect gift to celebrate the moms in your life? Aura frames are beautiful Wi-Fi connected digital picture frames that allow you to share and display unlimited photos. Every mom I have ever given an Aura frame to has absolutely loved it. And that includes a lot of moms I know. This is a gift that I have personally given many, many times. And it's great. I can upload photos from my phone the moment I take them. And that means that mom or grandma out there is going to get pictures of their loved ones delivered to their living room. And right now, Aura is having a great sale for Mother's Day. Listeners can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. That's AuraFrames.com and use the code SCARVES at checkout to show your support for our show. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey, when you listen to podcasts, it really just comes down to whether or not you like the sound of everyone's voices. My voice is one of the sounds you'll hear on the podcast Dr. Game Show, and this is the voice of co-host and fearless leader Joe Firestone.
This is a podcast where we play games submitted by listeners, and we play them with callers over Zoom we've never spoken to in our lives. So that is basically the concept of the show. Pretty chill.
So take it or leave it, bucko. And here's what some of the listeners have to say.
It's funny, wholesome, and it never fails to make me smile.
I just started listening and I'm already binging it. I haven't laughed this hard in ages. I wish I'd discovered it sooner.
You can find Dr. Game Show on MaximumFun.org.
Video games can make you laugh.
They can make you cry.
They can even make you sing.
We're the hosts of Triple Click.
It's a podcast about video games.
This is an exciting time for new games, from Diablo to Final Fantasy.
From Starfield to Street Fighter.
From Zelda to, oh, who are we kidding? We're just going to talk about Zelda.
Whether you play games or you just like hearing about them, we've got you covered.
Find us at MaximumFun.org or wherever you get your podcasts. Bye.
What do we have coming up on the next episode, Ben?
Episode next is season 2, episode 24, The Collaborator. Kira must investigate the man she loves when she learns he may be the Cardassian collaborator responsible for the massacre of 43 Bajorans. Or, of course, our good friends over at Netflix describe it as, Bajor is about to elect a new spiritual leader, and Kira's lover, Vedic Barile, is the leading candidate. Go, Kira! All right.
Good job by her.
Yeah. I feel like whoever writes those captions doesn't understand, like, some basic rules of drama.
Like, almost as if they're being paid to deter.
Right. Like, oh, it sounds like that won't be an interesting episode.
Like what many have accused us of being. Well, you want to see if we're doing this episode in a particular way, Ben?
I could get behind that course of action.
I believe we're on square 72 right now, are we not?
That is the drunk square upon which we are.
We are on the Quarks Bar today. Where will we be next week, I wonder?
To get to anything of any consequence, we would have to roll a 6. That would put us on square 78, which is an nth degree episode.
That, of course, meaning an episode with extensive research.
Right. We have to know so much about this episode. It's basically coming out of our pores.
This is maybe the square I want to land on the least.
I kind of like the idea of, like, kind of knowing whereof I speak.
What do you know about that?
I'm just saying, like, doing a bunch of research on an episode seems like it would be fun and interesting. No notes sounds terrifying and bad.
You're such a teacher's pet, Ben. No one wants that. No one wants that from you.
I don't know about that, Adam. We'll see what people say on social media.
You're required to learn as you play. Roll.
Why don't you roll them bones, dude?
I'm going to roll them. Oh, shit, dog. I rolled a 5.
Chula!
Did I win?
Hardly.
We're not quite at the nth degree.
Right.
We're on square 77, a regular old episode. And if
That's
I could
good.
Convince you to go ahead and roll on through to recording the next episode, it'll be kind of like a bonus drunk-isode.
It'll be a hungover episode, is what I'll say. Lucky you.
One of us is going to get stuck editing this one, and the other is going to get stuck editing the other one. So you'll be the judge.
Among those who are the most lucky are our friends of DeSoto, Ben. They gather on the Facebook and the Reddit and the Twitter using the hashtag GreatestGen. They're all over the place. There are literally dozens of them talking about this great, great show. Among them are people we need to thank maybe the most.
Oh, yeah.
People like Adam Ragusea, who designed the theme music and the interstitial music to The Greatest Generation. Of course, the OG music designer, this whole thing, from the very beginning, has been one Dark Materia.
Is music designer a term?
It is today.
Go to the Max Fun Store at maxfunstore.com to get a Greatest Gen t-shirt or pint glass, as described in this episode. That would be really cool. You could also, if you...
Go to St. Louis and visit the famous Arsh.
God, I fucking need... If you would like to be the new co-host of this program, send an email to drunkshimoda@gmail.com. I'm the only one that reads that account.
Good fucking luck sitting in this chair.
Yeah, you'll have to go over to Adam's house and sit in that chair. Yeah. It's a great gig.
You won't have to do hardly anything.
You know, like, we could even talk about maybe you taking over his spot on Friendly Fire.
Oh, yeah. That wouldn't take much.
We got lots of different social media things that people do, right? We got the Greatest Gen hashtag on Twitter. Adam's on there as @CupForTime. I'm at Benjamin AHR. There's a great Facebook group, a great Reddit sub. There are all kinds of other social media-ish things like Twitch and Slack and stuff that are happening. I don't really understand them, but they're happening.
You'd have to be a millennium to understand all of that.
Go to MaximumFun.org/donate if you want to support the show for real, for real. This is kind of the thing that has changed Adam in my life, and if you find this entertaining, if you find it to be a diverting and net positive part of your week, and you want to help ensure that it keeps going and keeps being a thing, you can support us financially, and we really appreciate the folks that do that.
If you support the show, you're a friend of DeSoto. If you don't, you're just an acquaintance.
Yeah.
You're an acquaintance of DeSoto.
Yeah.
That's all you get to call yourself.
If you see DeSoto on the street, you just get to, like, nod at him.
real financial support for my real friends. Sham financial support for my sham friends.
Yeah, with that.
We'll be back at you next time with another great episode of Star Trek Deep Space Nine and another episode of The Greatest Generation Deep Space Nine, which will be shirtless for more of it than you would think.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.